My name is Henry Fonda. The sound you just heard was the sound of the cavalry charge. It was not sounded on an ordinary bugle nor blown by an insignificant bugler. It's one of the most incredible. The bugler's name, Kenneth Lanfrey. He is the man who sounded the famous charge of the Light Brigade in the year 1854 and was immortalized by Lord Tennyson's poem. The recording was made by Thomas Edison in the year 1891.
I am Trumpeter Lanfrey, one of the surviving trumpeters charged to the line. I am now going to sound the bugle that was sounded at Waterloo and sound the charge as was sounded at Balaclava on that very same bugle. On the 25th of October, 1854,
record made at Edison House, Northumberland Avenue, London, August 2nd, 1890.
During the next 45 minutes, you will hear the voices and sounds that make up the 20th century. The men, women, and events that have lived through time to remain with us today. The living sound record of the greatness as it happened. The voices and sounds are real. Many great people of the 20th century are missing, for recordings during the early days of the century were virtually unknown. Many of the voices are difficult to understand. But as you listen, think back. Think back to the glory of the past and the achievements, and then realize the grandeur of the moment. Think back to the year 1892, the place, London, and a lady known as the Lady of the Lamp, Florence Nightingale, as she salutes her comrades who went through the Battle of the Crimea and the charge of the Light Brigade.
God bless my dear old comrades of Balaclava.
God bless my dear old comrades of Balaclava.
And bring them safe to shore.
And bring them safe to shore.
The 20th century has seen its share of war, and when the final shots are fired and the victors and vanquished disperse their armies, there are those in high places who also speak of their brave comrades. Listen to the Prince of Wales, later to become King Edward VIII of Great Britain in the year 1926.
It was as a nation of sportsmen, of men and women who hated cruelty and injustice and believed that a word given should be a word kept, that we went into the Great War. All took their chance, like sportsmen, and have endured the consequences. Never let us forget these sportsmen and their descendants.
And a few decades later, the husband of another monarch, Prince Philip, after World War II.
In every kind of human activity, there are those who lead, and there are those who follow. You have honored the leaders. Now, if you will allow me, I would like to accept the freedom of this city, not only for myself, but for all those millions who followed during the Second World War.
But before war's end, there is the terrible sound of destruction. And sometimes it is the human sound. Rudolf Hess introduces the Fuhrer Adolf Hitler in the fantastic example of pageantry that set the German nation afire with today Europe, tomorrow the world.
Die Partei ist Hitler! Hitler aber ist Deutschland! Wie Deutschland Hitler ist!
The flame that was kindled by a voice was kept burning by a chorus of voices.
Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Sieg Heil! Heil!
And always the music. Across an ocean in the year 1940, as the Hitler avalanche moved through Europe, a president ran for a third term.
Republican National Chairman Martin is one of that great historic trio, Martin, Barton, and Fish.
But there were voices in opposition to Roosevelt. the Republican candidate, Wendell Willkie.
7.5 years now, every year, a mounting federal public debt. Is there anybody here so damn dumb that thinks that can go on for 4 more years?
And they debated. The President of the United States.
The overwhelming majority of Americans will not be scared by this blitzkrieg of verbal incendiary bomb.
Mr. Willkie.
This is the last untouched land of freedom in all this world. Help me, help me, help me save it.
And instead of heils for a Fuhrer, there were other voices. Cheers for Willkie. And there was humor in the midst of turmoil. The wit, Irvin S. Cobb.
I am a Democrat, and in that statement is my reason and my boast and my pride that this year I shall vote the straight Democratic ticket. I shall vote for every Democrat running for state or local office in my voting precinct, and for president I shall vote for the only Democrat running for president this year under any party emblem whatsoever. You guessed it, Wendell Willkie.
It is strange that with the terrible destruction and death that comes with war, there is also a time when those who observe the peculiar goings-on of nations speak of their actions with the simple solutions that may come from the mouths of small boys. Will Rogers smiles at the world.
I got a plan that'll stop all wars. When you can't agree with your neighbor, you move away. Now that's my plan. Move nations away from each other. Take France, Germany. They can't agree. I'll take France and trade places with Japan. Let Japan live there by Germany. And if those two want to fight, well, let them fight. Who cares? We'd run excursions to war like that. Then that would solve the Irish problem. Take England and move them away from Ireland. When you move England away from Ireland, don't you let Ireland know where you're taking them, or they'll follow them and get them.
So today you listen to the voices of men long since gone, and you wonder at the magnificence of the invention that has preserved the memory of their greatness. But where did it all begin? In the year 1878, a 31-year-old genius named Thomas Edison recorded a voice on a cylinder machine that he called a phonograph.
The first words I spoke in the original phonograph, a little piece of practical poetry. Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
The year was 1865 and the month April. The place, Ford's Theater in Washington. And on the night of April 17th, President Abraham Lincoln would be shot by an actor, John Wilkes Booth. The name of Booth was one of the most famous in America, not because of the assassin, but because his brother Edwin was one of the most renowned actors in the American theater. Booth's words in 1890 are not too clear. They will first be spoken by a narrator.
She wished she had not heard it, yet she wished that heaven had made her such a man.
She wished she had not heard it, yet she wished that heaven had made her such a man.
She thanked me and bade me if I had a friend that loved her, I should but teach him how to tell my story, and that would woo her.
She thanked me. And bade me if I had a friend that loved her, I should but teach him how to tell my story, and that would do her.
Upon this hurt I spake.
Upon this I spake.
She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her, that she did pity them.
She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her, that she...
Booth was one of the great Shakespearean actors of all time, and few Americans have ever been compared to him. But the year he died, an 11-year-old boy was learning the same parts that made Booth famous. His name, John Barrymore.
Ethel gave me my first break in the theater. She put me on the stage for the first time professionally in a play called Captain Jinx. I next played with her in a drama called Sunday, in which she spoke the now famous line, "That's all there is. There isn't any more."
The early days of the 20th century were crowded with great names and great events. The big issue when McKinley won the presidency in 1896 was gold versus silver. McKinley wanted the country to remain on the gold standard. The Democrats, led by one of the great orators in history, William Jennings Bryan, appealed for the unlimited use of silver.
You shall not press down upon the brow of labor this crown of thorns. You shall not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold.
The year of the McKinley-Bryan fight, a 33-year-old Major League Baseball player turned to the pulpit. His name, Billy Sunday. He was one of the most forceful speakers to step before an audience. Of all the adherents for prohibition in the United States in the 1920s, who could compare to Billy Sunday?
The return to the saloon would mean the overthrow of civilization in our land. It was because I didn't want our boys to die drunkards that I fought and fight. I'm going to live long enough to see America so dry, you'll have to prime a man before he can spit. And I'll fight the saloon from Hawaii to Hoboken. And I'll kick it as long as I've got a foot. And I'll fight it and punch it as long as I have a fist. I'll butt it as long as I have a head. I'll bite it as long as I have a tooth. And when I'm old and fistless and footless and toothless, I'll gum it till I go home to glory and it goes home to perdition.
But while Sunday spoke of demon rum and the road to hell, a New York congressman and World War I flyer would come out with his own thoughts. His name, Fiorella H. LaGuardia.
I believe that God Almighty, when he made grapes, intended that grapes should be enjoyed by all of the people. And I don't think that he intended the use of grapes to be made into jelly.
Billy Sunday died in the year 1935. That same year, another famous American was killed by an assassin's bullet, a demagogue who ran his own dictatorship, Senator Huey Long of Louisiana, who had tried to share the wealth of a nation.
They think that Huey Long is the cause of all their worry. They go gunning for me. But am I the cause of their misery? Why, they're like old Davy Crockett, who went out to hunt a possum. He saw in the gleam of the moonlight that a possum in the top of the tree was going from limb to limb. So he shot, but he missed. He looked again and he saw the possum. He fired a second time and missed again. Soon he discovered that it was not a possum that he saw at all in the top of that tree. It was a louse in his own eyebrow.
But at that time, too, the sounds of war were beginning to be heard. The year 1935 saw Italy invade Ethiopia in the prelude to World War II. Benito Mussolini gave the reason that Italy was protecting its borders. A few years earlier, he spoke in English to the people of the United States.
I will speak to you of a problem which interests the whole of mankind, namely, peace or war.
Italy needs peace. Italy will never take the initiative in promoting war.
A whole world remembered that just 15 years before, the great war to end wars had been fought. And, too, there was a great American general to lead the United States Expeditionary Forces, General John Pershing, on the eve of battle.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you. Everything you hold, only the hardest blows can win against the enemy we are fighting.
And soon the war would end and great voices would be heard. Voices for a League of Nations. President Woodrow Wilson.
It is in the broad light of this new day that we stand face to face with great questions of right and of justice. What is there to do? There are two great things to do. One is to set up the rule of justice and of right. The other thing is the great task of protecting our people and our resources.
And in opposition, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge.
I must think of the United States first. And when I think of the United States first, in an arrangement like this, I am thinking of what is best for the world. Internationalism is to me repulsive.
Wilson was not heard, and the League died with him. But in 1920, a new voice came forward for the first time. The former Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was nominated to run for vice president by the Democrats.
We have passed through a great war, an armed conflict which calls forth every resource, every effort on the part of the whole population. The war was won by Republicans as well as by Democrats. The war was brought to a successful conclusion by a glorious common effort, one which in the years to come will be a national pride.
But in 1920, the name of Roosevelt was not famous because of the vice presidential candidate. For it was Franklin Roosevelt's fifth cousin, Teddy Roosevelt, who had just ended one of the most dramatic careers in American history. In 1912, he bolted the Republican Party after breaking a longtime friendship with President William Howard Taft. He started the Progressive Party with the words, "I feel as strong as a bull moose." Then he campaigned.
"I wish to see you join the Progressive Party and act in that party and as good citizens in the same way I'd expect any one of you to act in a football game. Don't flinch, don't fall, and hit the line hard."
And in the White House, during the early part of what history calls the lawless decade, was a man whose administration would be saturated with scandal and intrigue. Teapot Dome, poker games, and a heart of gold are all most people care to remember about Warren Harding. But in 1923, he was humble and sincere as he spoke at a memorial for America's World War I dead.
"I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. It must not be again. It must not be again."
And across the waters of the Atlantic, a beloved monarch of an empire upon which the sun never set spoke to his victorious soldiers, to a native of Fiji, a bushman from Australia, a student in Singapore, and a cockney in London. King George V.
"To those who are suffering or in distress, I offer my deepest sympathy. But let us prove ourselves both strong to endure and resolute to overcome."
While back in the United States in 1923, there died a lady from France who was of another era, but whose memory is preserved for the ages. Divine Sarah is enough. For a critic once said that Sarah Bernhardt was sent to us by God.
"The Teddy Blue, the song, an autre, an autre, la, la, partout allongeant la même forme bleue. Il en meurt, il en meurt ainsi pendant des lieux. Oh, et tout ça."
There was also in the 20s an era known as the Golden Age of Sport. Names like Babe Ruth.
"I've had three ambitions in my life. One was to hit 700 home runs. The other was to play 20 years. And the next one was to be in 10 World Series. I succeeded in one last year, making my 10th World Series. And next year gives me the opportunity to play in 20 years. And if I had 46 home runs, I'll have my 700 home runs, and I'll sure be satisfied with everything."
Jack Dempsey.
"The first thing I recollect is seeing Big Jess stand over the corner, looked in great shape and very confident. I didn't know whether I was going to be in a fight or a foot race. I mean, I thought I was going to knock him out in the first round. But after seeing him, I thought I better fight for my life. I'd heard that Willard had been hit by everything in the world. No one could ever knock him down. I was wondering if I was going to have enough punch to knock him out of the picture. I made up my mind to keep waiting the fellow as much as possible and not let him hit me and do the punching myself and duck under his punch as much as possible. And I did that in the first round. I had the opportunity to use a straight right hand under the heart. Then the fight was all the other way."
Bobby Jones.
"Well, a friend of my father's gave me a golf club and a ball. And that made it pretty simple."
But in the 20s, there was a new entertainment medium that had caught the public fancy, the motion picture. And in the early days of glamour and hero worship, there were undisputed kings and queens. There was a silent star who knew no equal in popularity, but very few people ever heard him speak. He died before the beginning of talking pictures. But the romantic chic, Rudolph Valentino, left a record of his voice for posterity. He not only speaks, he sings. And there were the sweethearts of the screen, Douglas Fairbanks and Mary Pickford. And thousands would come to the docks to greet them when they returned from an around-the-world trip.
"We have traveled 24,000 miles to find California. And here we are. Now, since this is 6:30 in the morning, I'll introduce my better three-quarters. Mrs. Pickford,
I accept that, Mr. We're delighted to be home. I haven't seen such a lovely sight in 4 months. And 24,000 miles. Oh, Douglas. I'll wager you forgot to stop the milk in Beverly Hills before we left.
This, too, was the age of the Ku Klux Klan, the marathon dance contests, and Abey's Irish Rose, the play that was panned by the critics, but which ran to a record 2,327 performances. It was also the age of fads and hoodwinks, and there was a Frenchman named Emile Coué, who made thousands believe they were feeling better in every way.
Day by day, in every way, I'm getting better and better.
This was an era of showmen and showmanship, and hundreds of thousands of followers came to a magnificent California temple to hear the words of Amy Semple McPherson.
Come, come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest.
But in a century known for extravaganzas and hoopla, the famous impresarios look back to another century for the man who made the mold. It seems impossible that someone born while James Madison was in the White House and was 55 years old when the Civil War began, could ever leave his words to the ages. But listen now to the incomparable P.T. Barnum, who coined the phrase, the greatest show on earth.
I'd like to address the world through the medium of the latest wonderful invention, Edison's phonograph.
I thus address the world through the medium of the latest wonderful invention, Edison's phonograph.
So that my voice will reach future generations and be heard centuries after I have gone to the great, and as I believe to be, the happy majority. P.T. Barnum.
So that my voice will reach future generations and be heard centuries after I have joined the great, and as I believe, happy majority. P.T. Barnum.
In the history of politics, sports, and entertainment, there have been many great people whose memory lives on in an expression, a group of words so closely associated with an individual that they become as much a part of the person as a name. Listen now to a group of words. Is there a need for a name?
I'm very happy to be here. Come up and see me sometime. Anytime. Sooner the better.